Blog Talk Radio.
Hello there, welcome to Quiet Earth Radio, where everything is dedicated to the post-apocalyptic genre. excuse me, tonight we're going to have a special guest, Kevin Wheatley. I should be calling in here shortly. Now, Kevin Wheatley has directed and co-starred in this upcoming National Lampoon movie called The Beach Party at the Threshold of Hell. Now, it's a dark comedy, and it's got some pretty good, a lot of reviews. It debuted last year at the Los Angeles Film Festival, and from everything that we have read, it sounds like a pretty good movie. Now, let me go ahead and introduce my co-host here, Quiet Earth. How are you doing tonight, Quiet Earth?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing, Lil Quiet?
I'm doing great. Now, while we wait for Kevin to get in here tonight, You were lucky enough. You got a screener for this movie from National Lampoon. Any comments about the movie? That what did you take from it after seeing it today?
Well, I have to say it's not just a movie. It's really an epic, and it's done in kind of a I would say like a History Channel documentary style, where it switches back and forth between future historians talking about the original Founding Fathers, and like, you know, the live action with Tex Kennedy, who's Kevin Wheatley, he's the star of the movie, and all the many other main characters in the movie actually carrying out this epic, which, you know, it says is part one, and from what we understand, we might be getting part two and part three.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've read too. Let me go ahead and announce the call-in number. The call-in number is area code 646-716-7562. Again, that's area code 646-716-7562, and that's our calling number. Yeah, I was reading last night and some today, and there's some hints that possibly this is maybe might be the first movie of a trilogy. But you know, I don't want to get too far because we haven't even spoken to Kevin yet, or I think we're wanting to ask him about that. Did you come away? Is this kind of like a? I mean, it's kind of unusual to have a comedy post-apocalyptic movie. Would you classify it as a post-apocalyptic movie? Does it fit in that genre?
Oh, it not only does it slide in, I think it's kind of groundbreaking. I think this is gonna really help set pace for post-apocalyptic movies in the years to come, because you know, like we've discussed many times, there's been a real resurgence of our favorite genre. And this one really just, you know, even runs further with it, because, you know, I was actually talking with James Arnett, who's doing The Last Man. He's the writer and the director of that post-apocalyptic movie. And we discussed this, and he said, you know, there's really a huge canvas with post-apocalyptic movies that you have to work with, because, you know, you break society down and you have nothing. You can basically do anything you want. Mm-hmm. So the room that you have to work with is incredible. You can basically do any kind of story you want. And we've seen a lot of different stories like that in the post-apocalyptic genre, and this is definitely no exception. And this is one of the few PA comedies that's great.
Was it, I guess, well, how funny was it? I mean, did they have a lot of, I mean, was he, when you talk about such a movie in such a serious way, especially a post-apocalyptic movie where you're talking about, you know, a lot of destruction, a lot of, I mean, did they get away with it? I mean, was it pretty funny, a lot of the aspects of the movie?
Oh, yeah, the timing was great. There was all sorts of different comedy. You know, you had everything from slapstick to pithy humor to more, you know, just regular comedic fare. And like I said, it did have good timing. So it pulls it off in a lot of different ways. And, in fact, there's also Tex talks a lot of smack in the movie. You know, he's constantly, like, arguing with, you know, his two guys that are sworn to protect him. So, you know, there's really a lot to the movie. It's very complicated and in-depth for just one movie, which is why I really hope we do get a part two and part three.
Right. Now, that's right. He has, now, is he like a, he says he's Tex Kennedy. Is he a descendant, he's supposed to be a descendant of the Kennedy family?
Yes, he is an actual orphan descendant of the Kennedy clan.
Okay. And he's got his, now he's still got his own, Secret Service, these two robots, right?
Yeah, these two robots, this is a funny story. These two robots, they basically, they're like synthetic humans. One has like a human heart and the other has regenerative powers. So they're programmed, like they're sworn to protect the president. And this is before, like, you know, the nuclear war and everything happens in Beach Party. So this is like a little while before that. Anyways, they fail miserably. The president gets killed. So, you know, they're sworn and the whole deal. So what they do is they go and drink for the next 19 years. You know, what else are you going to do, huh? Anyways, they drink for the next 19 years until they get a new mission, and that one is to protect the orphan child, Tex Kennedy. So this is when, you know, the nuclear war starts. They dump Tex into a fallout shelter by himself, and they're fighting off, like, hordes of, like, I don't know, it doesn't really specify. But anyways, they can't get in the shelter in time. They're sitting outside the shelter waiting for 20 years while Tex is in there by himself, and they're waiting outside for 20 years till, you know, Half-Life is done, and, you know, and that's kind of, that's where after the story starts, was when he comes out.
So they're waiting, they're hanging out at the bar, huh, for 19 years?
Yeah.
They get a 19, Lord, and so they're hanging out and just sipping on brewskis and whatnot, and waiting for Kennedy to come out of his bunker. Now, you made a funny thing. You said something about the, okay, they're in bunkers apparently after this nuclear attack or apocalypse, whatever happened. So all the people that survived apparently are, you know, locked themselves in these bunkers now. You said something funny. You said they found this Benny guy, the guy they're looking for. Now, he was in a bunker 9 or something. There was, you said something about his power, electricity or something.
Yeah, he had an L9 model bunker, and they were like, and the power had gone out. So the guy had gone blind because the power had been out for years, right? He was all pale and blind, and they were like, you know, if you would upgrade to the XL20 bunker, it's guaranteed not to have the electricity go out. You know, the guy's been in there for 20 years. It's just a funny comment, you know.
That is pretty funny. I mean, I would hate to be locked in a bunker and not to have any electricity for 20 years, you know. That would be pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, the pictures and they show of, like, the humans, like, maybe it says, like, 1 million people are left in America after, you know, after the war, like, or all the nuclear bombs hit, because it never really specifies. This is, like, 1 million people left, and it shows, like, these pictures of people who are just in shambles, like, missing limbs and just all dirty, and, you know, it's really sad, but it puts a comedic lens on it, you know?
Right, right. Well, let me let people know that are listening. Now, we have scheduled Kevin Wheatley to come on. Apparently, he's running late here this evening. Or hopefully, we didn't get cross paths on communication. But anyhow, we're going ahead and we're talking about the movie, the Beach Party at the at Threshold of Hell, which is being presented by National Lampoon. And this movie is going to be out in limited theaters around the country beginning October 19th. Again, it's a dark comedy on the post-apocalyptic genre, and the premise of the movie is basically there's been this nuclear apocalypse, and most of the survivors have gone into bunkers, and they're waiting out 20 years, you know, for the fallout, for the radiation to dissipate, and eventually they start crawling out of their bunkers And that's where it seems like this movie begins. Now, Quiders, you said that when you watch it, though, it was almost like watching a history film, too, because the way the movie's told or the way they do the movie, you have there's like little shots there because they're really in the future, I guess, right? They're telling a story about this is the new America, and these are the forefathers. Is that correct?
Yeah, they're the founding fathers of the new America. And so, like I said, it's kind of like part History Channel thing, part movie, because it keeps going back and forth between the movie and scholars set in the future from them who have written books about these new founding fathers, and they're talking about them, you know, and so it cuts back and forth. There's a lot of explanation as well as to who all the different characters are in the movie, because there's like, I think there's like at least 20 like main characters in the movie, and every one of them is integral to the story.
That's pretty interesting. Now there's also as you described earlier, actually when they come out of the bunker, they've been listening to a radio show or something this whole time, right? I think it's Stephen Baldwin plays the character, and he is on this radio, and he's keeping them. Was he giving them the news, or what's going on with that?
Well, actually, it's I think it's Danny Baldwin. Anyways, it's one of the Baldwins.
Oh, okay, okay.
You can't keep them straight, but yeah, there's I think it's Danny Baldwin, and he's got a gamma ray broadcast station, they call it, and he has declared himself king of a new America, right? So he's doing these broadcasts, and everybody in all these underground bunkers is listening. And it goes around and it shows all these, like, pictures of all these old school radios from, like, I don't know, like the 50s or the 20s or something.
Right.
Anyway, so he's the king of America, and he's broadcasting, and he kind of sets this whole storyline in motion.
Now Danny Baldwin, he's the king right now, right? In the movie,
he's the king while everybody's in the bunkers waiting for the half-life, you know, that during that 20 years. He's declared himself king, and, you know, that's that.
Okay. Now, let me ask you a little bit about the movie yourself, since you've seen it. How did it look to you? I mean, I know this is an indie film. It's an independent film. They did this on they didn't do it on a large budget, so how does the look of the movie look as far as what you saw?
It looks incredible. And you know, one of the things I wanted to ask Kevin was, you know, is this the same film that old school radios from, like, I don't know, like the 50s or the 20s or something?
Right.
Anyway, so he's the king of America, and he's broadcasting, and he kind of sets this whole storyline in motion.
Danny Baldwin, he's the king right now, right? In the movie,
he's the king while everybody's in the bunkers waiting for the half-life, you know, that during that 20 years. He's declared himself king, and, you know, that's that.
Okay. Now, let me ask you a little bit about the movie yourself, since you've seen it. How did it look to you? I mean, I know this is an indie film. It's an independent film. They did this on they didn't do it on a large budget. So how does the look of the movie look as far as what you saw?
It looks incredible. And you know, one of the things I wanted to ask Kevin was, you know, is this the same film that they had a year ago at festivals, you know, as it is now that National Lampoon has picked it up? Because there's quite a lot of special effects in it, not for the movie itself, but for, like, explanation of characters and stuff. I can't really explain it, but, you know, once you see it, you'll know what I mean. And you, by the way, folks, you'll definitely want to see this one. So it may be an independent film, but it's still very well done.
Still well done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was reading also the IMDb page on the movie. Now, there's several user comments over there. There's about a half a dozen. Now, most of the people that have commented over there, they've seen the movie. They watched it, as I said before, at the Los Angeles Film Festival. Now, when this film came up, there were 200 movies, independent films, shown at the festival. And most of those comments said that, now you have to remember, another independent movie that came out at that time last year was Little Miss Sunshine. Now that movie got all kind of awards, you know, how, you know, I mean, for whatever you might think about the movie itself, I mean, it got a lot of accolades, a lot of awards, a lot of praise, you know, for being, you know, what it was. And from what I understand was, a lot of people were saying that this movie, Threshold of Hell, was right next to it as far as out of those 200 movies. So that's
It was better. It was better. I've seen both movies, and this is a better movie.
Yeah. Okay. now there's also we talked about this earlier. Now there's a little bit of there's an evil person in this movie, or the enemy, or the character, and hold on just a moment, Clarence. I think we have a call here. Let me see. This might be Kevin. Let's see.
I apologize.
Yes, Erico 917. Is this Kevin?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you guys were on West Coast, calling about West Coast time.
I just got
your email. I apologize.
No problem. Well, we're sitting here just talking about the film itself. Let's go right into it with you, Kevin. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the movie?
Oh, it's a post-apocalyptic. I understand you guys are post-apocalyptic fans.
Yes, sir.
But it's
it's a
comedy though, and it's told 20 years after the bomb, when people are starting to reemerge from their underground bunkers and reestablish the government. So it's told almost like a History Channel documentary, in that, you know, in a way that if we were watching a documentary about Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and so on. This is sort of like you would be if you were way off in the future, seeing how this country, New America, was created. So there's a lot that has to do with politics, and it's also mystical and fun and futuristic, and most of all, it's, you know, it's a comedy and an adventure. So,
yeah, I actually watched it again today. I got a screener copy from National Lampoon, and I have to say it's great.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. We had a great time making it. You know, it's an independent. It's about as independent as it gets. So it took almost 4 years now, but it's opening a week from tomorrow now in theaters. You can go to thresholdofhell.com to find out which theaters, which cities. It's in something like 30 cities.
Right.
Yeah, I got the press release on that. I've got to ask you though, really, because I'm really interested. Are you guys going to be making part two and part three?
Actually, right now, and I hesitate even whether or not I'm supposed to talk about this, but Fox Studios is interested in making it into a television series.
Wow.
So we have a showrunner now on it. I guess worked a lot with Sci-Fi Channel. And now we're going to start pitching to networks. So that's kind of where we're at. We're figuring out the pitch to start going to networks for it.
Well, the movie seemed to be received pretty well last year at the L.A. Film Festival.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, and from what I've read, a lot of people, as far as the user, some of the comments of people that saw it last year, put it right up there close to the independent movie Little Miss Sunshine. Now, we were just joking. I mean, whatever you may think about that movie, but that was an independent movie. You know, it got a lot of real awards, a lot of accolades. So,
right.
Like I said, that's pretty good company.
Yeah. People really like, you know, it's like, it's one of those movies that, you know, people aren't quite going to understand, or they're gonna really love it. We've had a lot of really really great fans, really a lot of support from people, and we just had a really good time with dealing with everybody that we've dealt with. And,
well,
have seen the movie.
Well, let me ask you this: about the post-apocalyptic genre. What made you want to make a post-apocalyptic movie, and much like, you know, a comedy at that? What influenced you on that?
To be honest, it started off, it was going to be a Western. It was going to be about politics, mm-hmm. sort of in the Old West, sort of a Deadwood kind of feel. But okay. It started to become post-apocalyptic because the fun thing about that is you don't really have a huge amount of rules with post-apocalyptic. You know, the world's changed, mm-hmm. sociology's changed. Mm-hmm. And you're basically creating a world from the ground up, which
right.
which I really loved, because it's just you don't have any
You don't have any limits.
It's really loud here in L.A.
Okay.
You don't have a huge amount of restrictions. And so it kind of came out of that. And then, you have there's like monsters in the movie and robots and all kinds of fun stuff, as well as the political stuff. So, you can just have a lot more fun and be a lot more playful with the storytelling.
Gotcha. Well, tell me about some of the characters on the show, in the movie, and some of the cast members.
Okay. Well, I play Tex Kennedy in the movie, who's sort of the protagonist, I guess, kind of an anti-hero. And then I have my two robots, Secret Service agents, Yule and Quincy. They're a couple of bumbling guys. And then we capture who I sort of consider to be the Paul Bunyan or the John Henry of this world, and that's Cannibal Sue.
Right. Okay.
And then we run into to adversaries. Beginning of the movie opens with Jane Seymour as the last president before the United States fell.
I see. Okay.
So she's in it there at the beginning. Daniel Baldwin's in it. He plays this. The story's sort of complicated into much detail. It's almost one of those. I hope people can see it because I don't want to spoil too much. But Daniel Baldwin in it. We have some historians because it does have that historical feel to it.
Yeah.
His History Channel documentary. So we'll cut to historians talking about the different characters. And we have Richard Reilly, who people love him from Office Space and over 100 other movies and TV shows.
Yeah.
And then Tony Hale, who people recognize as Buster on the show Arrested Development. And it's a great cast. I'm really, really pleased with how it went.
Where did you film the beach party at?
We filmed all the exteriors just outside of Pensacola, Florida.
Okay.
Which is where I'm originally from. And the script actually started with the location. There's a Civil War fort out there, and these pristine white beaches. And so I wrote it around that, and then the interiors we shot here in L.A. in okay. some warehouses.
Yeah, because I was looking at a little bit of the trailer. It looks because I'm down in the southeast myself, and it looks very familiar.
Yeah, where are you guys?
Well, I'm
in Colorado.
Yeah, and
I'm
in South Carolina.
Oh, great. Yeah, yeah. I went to school in North Carolina.
Cool.
I'm a big fan of the. Big fan of the Southeast in general. I hope I'm hoping that the show goes. We can take our whole production company there and start working down there because I'm a big fan of the Southeast.
Cool.
Well, Kevin, I've got to ask you the ukulele song. That was my favorite part in the entire film.
Right.
Is there anything you can tell us about that? Because when people are going to see it, they're going to love that.
Well, we knew that we had to have a little song there and. And it was really written on the set while they were setting up lights. Paul and I just kind of went aside, and Paul sort of came up with a little thing. And at first, if I remember right, it was a little bit more of a Tenacious D-esque song. It was like a little dirty, and I thought, no, I think it makes the character more likable if it's a really cute, innocent song. And I'm glad we did it that way because I really liked that moment too. It just kind of humanizes these characters for a bit.
I wish we had Quincy on the phone right now. He could sing it for us because it was just awesome.
Yeah, you can find it on the internet. I think we actually have it on our MySpace page, too. You can click on it.
You can actually get an MP3 of it online.
Yeah, is that right?
Well, I don't know. I was asking.
I think so. I think there's something. It has a little media player on our MySpace page, which is myspace.com/BPTH movie, I believe. I don't know if you guys are in front of a computer.
So who came up with the ukulele song?
What's that?
Yeah, who wrote the ukulele song?
Yeah, it was we wrote it Paul and I put it together sort of. He just started playing the chords and we sort of tossed around some lyrics and it was just done right before we shot that. We wrote it in probably 5-10 minutes, just started singing it.
Just got it and improvised it. I got you.
Yeah, we had a lot of improv in the movie.
Yeah.
Originally, we shot I think we have about 120 hours worth of footage now. The movie's 85 minutes long. Did I say 120 hours? Yeah. So, you know, just over 100 hours worth of just, like, fun improv and all this kind of stuff, because those guys are all great at that kind of thing. And so we riffed a lot. And I think the ukulele song was definitely a part of that. Paul just having a little bit of fun.
Describe a day for me. Describe a day on the set at the beach party at Threshold of Hell. Give me a, what would be a, if I were sitting there on a set, what would it be like?
Well, it would be about 120 degree heat index, because we were shooting in Northwest Florida during the summer.
Oh.
And then under the reflectors, like some of those scenes where we first bring Benny out of the bunker and we're talking to him about what's happened. We had about 8 or 9 reflectors all around us, so that's like having 9, you know, 8 or 9 suns coming at you from every direction, say company. No, they didn't have anything to do with any of the imagery at all. They just, but we did make it shorter since we've been with them.
So what exactly got cut then?
Oh, it's hard to even go into. There's our most expensive set, for instance, got cut. It was like a $60,000 set or something. I hate to throw around numbers. But yeah. It was a scene between Yorick, who's the villain in The Threshold, the spawn of Satan, and Benny, who's the prophesied king. And it's this whole scene where he tries to kill Benny and it doesn't work out. I think a lot of this stuff we hope will be on some kind of DVD. I don't know if we're going to have it all in time for the January release of the DVD, but maybe down the line have a collector's edition or an additional DVD that we're going to release. But there's a lot of scenes that got cut. The original cut of the film was about 2.5 hours. So
oh, wow.
It used to be... Yeah,
that was an epic movie there.
Yeah. But we
need Waterworld.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed all those scenes, but it was just one of those things. It got much more into all the Destiny stuff and a lot of the mysticism more in the longer version. And I just started to realize that people don't really need that necessarily. They're ready to go with you. Then you don't really need to explain everything. And I think the earlier cuts were kind of explaining all these little like loose ends everywhere we could. And just started to realize that wasn't really that necessary.
Well, I have one quick question. I want to know what was the biggest surprise that you found when you were filming this movie? Something that maybe you didn't expect when you started filming.
To be honest, this is going to sound a little hokey or cheesy, but I think it was just the tenacity of the cast and crew. Mm-hmm. The fact that we were all just down there, you know, killing ourselves all day long in the heat, and every day we'd have like a production meeting at the end of the day, and I'd expect to see it empty, everybody taking the first flight out of there. And the fact that people muscled through and we just got it done, it speaks to the people that made this movie. And I don't know, that was very, very touching to me.
Well, it sounds like as you said, with your financing, toughness of making this film, you guys had to you had to overcome a lot of different things to get this movie done. I take it.
And all independent films are like that, but I think, and not to take away from other people's films, but our film, because it is so epic and it's so quick moving and so many scenes and so many characters and so much going on, I think it just made it that much crazier for us. But, you know, it's like you think back and we've had a lot of hard times and a lot of times when we didn't think it was going to work, but, you know, I think the good memories I have of this whole thing, it's just been a great experience overall. And that's what's come out as important to me in my memory. And but yeah, it was definitely, it was a nightmare at times, but,
well, let's turn to the future here. The movie's going to be premiering in a lot of different cities here on October 19th. Any special premieres coming up you're going to be doing to promote it?
I wanted to go to New York. I'm acting in this television show right now called Dirt on FX, so I wasn't able to leave. But I think we're having some kind of party next Wednesday to promote, and then it's playing at the, I believe, the Sunset Lemley here in L.A., so I'm probably going to go to that. I really think that we sort of had our big premiere red carpet and all that stuff at the Los Angeles Film Festival, because that was really where we kind of announced it to the world.
Okay.
And this one I think is going to be a little bit more low-key, but we are having, a thing next Wednesday night. And I've been so drowned in just everything I'm doing that I don't even know all the details on it. But
well, you want to plug Dirt for us? What's Dirt about?
Oh, Dirt's it's a show. It's in its second season. They're shooting the second season. Courtney Cox is on it, and it's about the paparazzi.
Okay.
So I'm playing a new character on that. So I'm doing, just working on that, seeing how long I can go before I get killed. To kill off my characters.
Well, I have another question about the movie. And, I live in Colorado, and here we have Boulder, right? And we call Boulder the Republic of Boulder. Nobody likes Boulder, right? So in the movie, you've got the Republic of Arizona.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like the same thing. What's up with that?
That's something that's going to be explained much more in the continued story. And so I almost don't want to spoil it, but it's where Marsalis is from, and we'll just say it's a colony of robots that had to move there to avoid a genocide, a robot genocide. I know that's kind of vague, but
dude, you can do a whole spin-off series on that one.
Yeah, it's the continued story of the movie. It gets a lot bigger, and it ends up. You find out what happened to the rest of the world and how the threshold of hell, the inhabitants there, can affect that. And we're really excited. We're going through it right now, just picking it all with a fine-tooth comb, this huge story that's still to come. But the movie is definitely the tip of the iceberg.
I'm really glad to hear that because, I mean, with the amount of complication and how layered the story is, it can't end right there, man. It's really got to go on.
Yeah, and there's a lot of loose ends. And less loose ends, like I said, it's the original cut of the movie. But, I think just the fact that it moves really fast, it's really fun, and people find it funny was almost more important than, trying to spend so much time tying up all those loose ends. But, I guess it just gives us a lot more that we can do later.
Pretty interesting. You got two robots for, they're Secret Service agents. They're protecting Tex Kennedy.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting little tidbit there to have two robots,
Yeah. And there's a comic book online that goes into their history. It's on our website, thresholdofhell.com. I think only half of it's up.
Yeah,
they want to release the other half. Like they want to publish it. But I wrote and illustrated that, and it's on thresholdofhell.com. It's just a comic book. It's up there. So
it sounds like you have a lot of different avenues going here with this film.
Oh yeah, we're franchising it like crazy.
Yeah,
we want to do the Saturday morning cartoons and the action figures and.
Oh yeah.
I'm kind of kidding, but.
Saturday morning cartoons with Campbell Sue. I'm wondering that.
Well,
can we bring up her all day?
Yeah. Well, we talk like that, and nights when we're all hanging out, it's like, the video game's going to be great.
Yeah.
All that kind of fun stuff. But who knows? It is people are starting to see it as a franchise kind of thing, especially if we get a series out of it, or even if that falls through and we end up doing the two sequel movies. I think it just seems like just from the small amount of people that have seen it so far, it is going to have a cult audience that'll follow us and have fun with all this kind of stuff that we have, because the world is very three-dimensional right now, and it's only going to get more three-dimensional, and we're really excited about the future of what happens in this crazy world.
Well, I just wanted one last question just here. I wanted to know about the National Lampoon. Did they did you present this to them, or did they come to you guys? Or
I believe that they saw it at the Los Angeles Film Festival, although I can't quite remember. We have a producer's rep company, Strategic Film Partners, that sort of came on, and they were sort of in charge of the selling of the film. But National Lampoon came on pretty early, and I think the big reason is that they're trying to expand their image in a way, and you know they're trying to acquire more edgy and challenging films.
Right.
And our movie was sort of like what I was actually surprised when I heard the name, because when I think of them, I sort of think of, you know, horny teenagers,
lowbrow movie,
frat houses,
yeah.
Vacation,
like yeah.
Yeah, and Animal House, you know, and those are classic movies, but our movie is sort of more of an adventure, political kind of thing. And But I've been really happy with them because they're trying to redirect their image a bit to expand to you know, a larger market.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great to have their infrastructure behind the film, you know, because they have the huge web presence and they have their own network and so on and so forth. So
and the name also.
Yeah, exactly. It's the most
label.
Recognizable name in comedy, and so yeah, I think it's been a really mutually beneficial relationship. I think it's gonna expand what people think of when they think of National Lampoon, and it's, you know, going to help us get our name out there.
Okay. Quater, do you have any more questions?
Let me see here. The beginning of the film, right? Okay, so we get nuked.
Right.
I'm curious, it never goes into who nuked us. And then there's like a Sunstroke Corporation logo.
Yeah, it's good. That's a good call. That's what the entire series is about. And that's are the next two movies. It's the Sunstroke Corporation that took us down, and that's what I mean by being the tip of the iceberg. We haven't even introduced the real enemy quite yet in the movie.
Okay.
So there's a worse enemy than the son of Satan.
What's that?
Yeah, so there's a worse enemy than Yorick, the son of Satan.
Oh yeah, much worse. But, I mean, I consider that as sort of like stay tuned, you know, and keep up with us because all those answers are going to be answered. I wanted to keep the characters in the dark about the Sunstroke Corporation, which was this massive entity that took over the United States and then took over the entire rest of the world. And that's where the story becomes much larger. And it all has to do with the Sunstroke Corporation and why the United States fell in the first place and the repercussions of that to the rest of the world and so on and so forth. So
there's kind of an evil corporate type to this, I see.
Exactly. I don't want to go too much into it, it's fun that you notice it, though, because that does become hugely important.
Okay. So based on what you're saying, then, if they took over the world, if I ask here, does that mean that more than the U.S. got nuked?
No, but the rest of the world basically had to fall to their knees, and it becomes, the entire rest of the world becomes, I'm afraid to get too much into this, but... But no, it's they just take over they managed to take over the rest of the world since the destruction of the United States crippled the rest of the world, you know, financially and sociologically.
Right, you really did leave this thing wide open for any possibility. I mean, it sounds great, man. You could do so much with this.
But trust me, we know what's going on. You know, it's all of those things we're making up as we go. It's all planned out, yeah, and it is. It's very fun to write because it is. It's open to really anything, and the story. I'm really excited about telling more of the story.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing it. Really, I mean, the movie's great, and I can't wait till other people get to see it.
Thanks, man. Is it playing near you guys? I know it's playing in Colorado Springs.
I'm actually up north near Fort Collins area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for me, I've been looking. Charlotte, you know, I'm in Columbia, so Charlotte's the biggest city that's close to where I'm at. But it is playing in Atlanta, so I'm going to may take a drive down there next weekend and check out the premiere down in Atlanta.
Yeah, I think we're playing in two theaters in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And we're hoping, you know, if people come and see it and like it and bring their friends, that maybe it'll expand to more markets.
Well,
Most of the exposure, I think, is going to come from the DVD, but it is going to be in theaters, you know, a week from Friday, and I hope as many people that can come and see it, because I think they'll really have a great time, especially if they're listeners of your show.
Yeah, and there will be a lot of people listening to the archives tonight. They're
right.
Syndicated around the world. Everybody, it's on the Internet. We get a lot of hits on the show, especially when we finish it. So people will be listening to this particular show for the next couple of weeks, months.
Great.
Yeah.
I had a couple episodes, and you guys have a really fun show going. It's great.
Well, thank you. Well, I think we're going to end it up winding on down here, Kevin. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, and again, I apologize about getting the time zone mixed up. I just saw the 9 o'clock. I was like, I'll call at 9 o'clock, and I got your email when I got home today, so apologize.
That's all right. I should have been more specific that I was on the East Coast, but I'm glad you made it.
Yeah, I'm glad I did, too.
Okay.
Thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me.
Okay, no, thank you. And good luck on making some future movies, and we hope to have you back on here in the future, okay?
For sure.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Good night. Goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, Quiet Earth. Well, that was a pretty good interview there. And as I said, you know, from a lot of the things I've read from a lot of the people that saw this at the L.A. Film Festival, I think there will be a lot of people that will see it. I think, if anything, this movie may turn into one of those kind of cult-following movies, you know?
It will be. And not only that, because it has the National Lampoon tag on it, it's going to be in grocery store video rentals, you know? Because they stock, like at my local grocery store, they stock National Lampoon movies, and when it comes out, I'm going to walk in there, and it's going to be sitting there, so it's going to get major exposure.
Yeah. Well, as I said, it's a little something different. That's one big thing I think going forward, because, you know, it's just not a post-apocalyptic movie like we've seen so many different versions of. As I said, it's a comedy. Mr. Wheatley, Ken Wheatley, talented guy, I mean, just... The acting, it just seems like it's going to be a pretty good hit. So, I look forward to it. Like I was telling Kevin, I'm going to try to make a drive down to Atlanta, which isn't too far from where I live. But I think I'll get down there and check it out in the theater. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember the review I did of Ever Since the World Ended. It was an independent post-apocalyptic flick. Done in a big documentary style, which I felt was really a groundbreaking post-apocalyptic film. I would classify this film as such. Right. This is another groundbreaking PA film. And from what we just heard from Kevin about like all the different avenues, you know, about the Republic of Arizona and the Sunshine Corporation and all this stuff, you know, I'm really looking forward to it, man. This could be huge, so...
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, I can tell by your voice that you enjoyed the movie. So, well, this was a lot of fun, Quiet Earth. We're going to go ahead and end the show now. For most people that are listening right now, they're going to be listening for most of this show in the podcast because the live show is already over. We'll be back on next Tuesday, and I'm not quite sure I exactly got nailed down what we're going to be having on this coming Tuesday, but obviously. Well, it'll be something to do with the post-apocalyptic genre.
Zombies. You know,
or zombies, yeah, I know, zombies too. Again, let me quickly say also, you can, folks, please go to www.quietearth.us. You can see a post. You'll see a review there from Quiet Earth on the movie The Beach Party at Threshold of Hell.
Tomorrow night, folks, is when I'll be posting that.
Okay, check that out tomorrow night. Also, Quiet Earth has got a ton of other material that's on his website. I mean, on just about every subject you can imagine in the horror, zombie, post-apocalyptic. So, again, that's www.quietearth.us. And again, real quickly, Kevin Wheatley's, their webpage, perhaps Quiet Earth will put a link on his website there for you, but that is www.thresholdofhell.com. For the official website for that. All right, Quiet Earth. Well, you have a good night, man, and it was a great night. I'm glad Kevin made it, and I'll talk to you next Tuesday. Okay, buddy?
Okay. Night, folks.
Bye-bye.
does he say? I'm on a Mexican radio. I'm on a Mexican, whoa, radio. I'm on a Mexican radio. I'm on a Mexican.
Again, don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue sky. Drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know. Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. Again, don't know where, don't know what.